Mentes catches an apple. Telemachus, as usual, sat alone with his back to them. He picked at his food and tried to shut out the grunts and scrapes and roars and belches from the long table behind him. Antinous was telling a story, a filthy one, it seemed, a story that provoked snorts and sniggers and a powerful banging of cups. If Telemachus ate somewhere else, it gave the impression that he was afraid of them. But when he sat here, alone in the hall, he was a target for hurled fruit and hurled insults, to which he had no reply. Once again he sank himself in an indulgent bath of self-recrimination. If only I were older, if only I were stronger, if only I were more properly trained in fighting, I would spear every one of them, through the neck. If only my father... A page opened the end door and let in a blaze of afternoon light. Telemachus looked up and saw a silhouette in the doorway. He screwed up his eyes but could not make out the features. "Who is that over there?" he asked the page.
"A stranger, my lord. He's been here since this morning, just standing at the gate. The gentleman told me to ignore him."
"Oh, did they?" said Telemachus, getting to his feet. "Well, we all know that the gentlemen have no sense of honour or duty." The page tittered and passed on. Telemachus approached the gate with his hand outstretched in welcome.
"Forgive me, sir, I have only now learned that you were here. There are those within who have no sense of the obligations of hospitality. Accept, please, the apologies of our house. In the name of Zeus Xenios, you are welcome."
Guest friendship, or xenia, was immensely important to the Greeks. Many of the quests, curses, and calamities in Greek myth arise from the blasphemous violation of the sacred canons of hospitality, the guest and host being equally obliged to respect them. Its special association with the king of the gods himself demonstrates its importance, and gave Zeus the epithet Xenios. Particularly great emphasis is laid upon it throughout Homer's Odyssey. As he bowed, Telemachus knew that these formal phrases, learned from his mother and grandfather, sounded stiff and pompous in the mouth of a beardless youth, but he knew that they should be spoken all the same. Closer up, he could see that the stranger was a man of middle age, with a neat beard and the greyest eyes. His feet were shod in gold sandals, and he leaned gracefully on a great wooden staff. No, not a staff. As the stranger moved forward to greet him, Telemachus saw the flash of a bronze spear point. "Pleased to come in, sir. After so long in the sun, you must be hungry and thirsty and ready to sit down." Telemachus guided his guest to the table where his own plate had yet to be cleared away. An apple core sailed through the air and struck the stranger full in the face. He did not flinch. The grey eyes did not blink. It was Telemachus who was stung. Tears of mortification sprang up.
Think
nothing of it, said the stranger, who opened his fist to show that somehow he had managed to catch the core. He put it in his mouth and swallowed it whole with what seemed to be great pleasure. He waved towards the men at the far table and called out, "Your thanks, my friends." The voice was soft, but carried far. The men's jeers subsided into mutters, and they returned to their dicing and drinking. Telemachus clapped his hands for service. "Meat and wine for our guest!" Stewards, wine boys, and slave girls came forward as Telemachus sat the visitor down. "My mother, the queen, would welcome you," said Telemachus, "but she is indisposed." The stranger accepted the footstool that Telemachus slid towards him, but declined with a gently upraised hand the services of the slave girl who knelt to remove his sandals and bathe his feet. "You are the son of Odysseus and Penelope," he said. "Telemachus is the name, I think. How tall you are." "Oh, the passing of the years. Yes, I think I do see something of your father in you. Is it the eyes or the mouth, I wonder?"
"You knew him," said Telemachus eagerly.
"Indeed. But when I was last here, this palace had not been built, and you were not yet born. Laertes was the king. But it is my turn to offer apologies. I should have told you who I am. My name is Mentes."
"King of the Taphians, that Mentes?"
"You are well informed, Telemachus. But to answer your question, yes, I know Odysseus, your father."
"Knew," said Telemachus gloomily. "My father is dead, long dead."
Mentes fixed his grey eyes on Telemachus. "How can you be so sure?"
10 years, 10 whole years have passed since Troy fell. He should have been back a long time ago. This island may be small, but news filters through to us. My father's brother-in-arms, Diomedes, returned safely to Argos quickly enough."
"Which is true, but when he got there, he found his wife, Aegialia, was living with another man, some say dozens of other men, aided by the goddess Aphrodite, who had never forgiven Diomedes for cutting the flesh of her wrist with his sword at the height of his Aristeia, which you can find in the book Troy. Thus he left Argos and, after various adventures, settled in Italy, where he founded many cities, including Brindisi and Benevento. Perhaps the least flawed of all the great warrior heroes of the Greek army, he was the subject of many hero cults in the centuries after his death. They say that when he died, his men wailed and keened so loudly and wildly, the gods, out of pity, turned them into albatrosses, whose call their lamentations had resembled. The Latinized name for the genus of great albatrosses is Diomedea.
"Menelaus and Helen are back in Sparta," Telemachus continued. "Agamemnon,
well, the world knows of the welcome Agamemnon received when he got home.
The entire Greek army, Argives, Danaans, Achaeans, Hellenes, Cretans, they're all safely back to their hearths and fields and families. All but Odysseus of Ithaca."
Mentes was too well-mannered to notice the catch in Telemachus's voice.
"Perhaps you are wrong," he said. "Perhaps your father lives. I picture him trapped on some remote island without the means to leave. These things have been known. I am sure that he will find his way and be with you before too long. I am no prophet, but I feel this. I do."
"You are kind to give me hope, sir. At least I think it is kind. Perhaps hope is a waste of time. Perhaps it keeps us from action. Never abandon hope. Hope is a prayer. A prayer that the gods may yet answer." The household bard bowed quickly towards Telemachus as he hurried past, lyre under his arm. He had been called for by the top table. They banged their fists with pleasure as he approached. Presently, sweet music and song struck up. Mentes smiled. "I'm glad you have kept Phemius. Odysseus treasured his verse and his voice. You have no memory of your father, I suppose?"
"I was only a baby when he left. But there is an image that comes to me, maybe a real memory, maybe an imagined one. The harbour wall, mother crying, a bearded face with gold-brown eyes and flashing teeth looming down at me. Argus barking and barking."
"That is how it must have been. In his absence, your grandfather Laertes has ruled here, I suppose?"
"At first, yes, but age has..."
Telemachus shifted uncomfortably. "Age has not been kind to him." Mentes nodded with understanding.
Yet someone has seen to your education. You are polished and polite. You speak well. Telemachus tried to hide his pleasure at this compliment. My father's friend Mentor tutored me. He and Eumaeus. Eumaeus the swineherd? You were the well-informed one, sir. Yes, my father's swineherd. But well-raised and well-schooled, he is the son of a king, you know. Mentes looked past Telemachus and towards the top table. It's none of my business, he said, but those men. Telemachus gave a bitter laugh. Men? They are not men, they are pigs. They are dogs. No, they're less than pigs and dogs. They are rats. They have infested our house for years. They call themselves suitors for my mother's hand. Odysseus is dead, they tell her. You must marry again. Of course, what they really want is the kingdom that comes with my mother. They want Ithaca. But should you not be king, if your father really is dead, that is? Telemachus jerked a thumb over his shoulder. Those back there, they are just a fraction of the infestation. There are more than 100 swarming around, kings and princes from outlying islands mostly, even some of the Ithacan lords enriched by my grandfather, but who were too old, or too cowardly, to sail with the others to Troy. Mentes frowned. By what right do they occupy your hearth and halls? By right of strength of numbers. What can I, one stupid boy, do? They have no respect for my royal blood. They slaughter the island's pigs and cattle without permission. They're on their way to drinking the cellars dry. They treat me like a child. They mock me. I can throw a spear and use a sword pretty well, I think, but I'm only 20. They are grown men, and there are so many of them. Why doesn't Zeus smash them with a thunderbolt? They observe no holy days and make no sacrifices to the gods of the house and island. I begin to believe that he and all the immortals have left Olympus. They have abandoned us or died. Telemachus, Telemachus, you must not say such things. The grey eyes flashed. Your pardon. I should not indeed. But why the gods do not punish these blasphemous rats is a mystery. All will be right in time. Mentor says that immortal time does not move like our time. Mentor is very wise. So, while the gods wait, these bastard sons of bitches drink all the wine, eat all the food, abuse the household. Can you wonder my mother keeps to her room? God, if my father really was alive and came home, they would piss themselves, shit themselves. They would run screaming from him like frightened children. He would come at them with sword and spear and hack them to pieces. He would slash their throats and... But he won't come. He's dead. Odysseus is dead. Of course he's dead. My father's dead and there's no hope. Shh! There is always hope. At least your mother has managed not to yield to any of these suitors. To Mentes' surprise, Telemachus laughed. I'll tell you how she kept them at bay. It was superb. You will love this. Mentes was amused by the speed with which Telemachus switched from intense despair to open delight. She started work on a great woven shroud. She told them all that it was clear that her father-in-law Laertes would soon die. She must make a winding sheet that would befit so great a king. The suitors may be godless oafs, but they could hardly object to so sacred and reverent an act, could they? So she weaved and weaved. Or is it wove and wove? Well, whichever. She sat at the loom by day, working on this great shroud. But at night, she would sneak back to her workroom and unpick almost all that she had done. The suitors were confused and angry at how long it was taking her, but there was nothing they could do about it.
What do you think of that?
As cunning as Odysseus himself, said Mentes. For over 3 years she did this, but then a slave girl went and spilled the beans. The suitors made Mother finish the cloth under this treacherous girl's supervision, and now they're getting impatient for a decision. She must choose one of them, they say. A sneering voice broke in, and hands were placed on Telemachus's shoulders. Not at lessons, boy. Mentor and the pig man must be waiting in the schoolroom. Today is the feast day of Demeter, Lord Antinous, said Telemachus, blushing fiercely.
Ah, so you'll be dancing round the shrine with flowers round your neck like the other maidens, will you? I must come and watch. But first, introduce me to your friend.
Telemachus stood and mumbled the introduction. Mentes, king of Taphos, this is Lord Antinous, son of Eupeithes. Mentes did not rise. Antinous looked down at him.
Mentes the Taphian, eh? Come to try your luck, have you? Back of the queue, I'm afraid. I have the prior claim.
Mentes gazed at him reflectively. The claim to what, I wonder, he said. To being the ugliest man in the Mediterranean world? That I would concede. The claim to being the stupidest? From all I hear, that prize is yours too. The most foul-smelling? That's immediately apparent. The smile Antinous had been wearing disappeared. With a snarl, he stepped back and reached for the dagger in his belt. Mentes stood. Telemachus didn't remember him being quite so tall. The bronze spear tip gleamed. The grey eyes shone with something that Telemachus found at once beautiful and terrible. Antinous let the dagger slip back into the belt. He gave a sickly grin.
Let us have no quarrels amongst strangers, he said. It is Demeter's day. You are, of course, welcome to try your luck with Penelope. All are equal here.
He turned with a shrug, as if to dismiss Mentes as an eccentric not worth his time. Mentes watched him go. An unsavoury specimen.
He is the worst. The others are just oafs. But Antinous puts on airs and knows how to lead them. He can be charming enough when he chooses. I think that's why I hate him the most.
Mentes smiled. It's time for action, don't you think?
Action?
Time to let the suitors know that you are not a boy, but a man, and the master of this house. Time they understood that only you and the queen decide matters here. You will set sail and determine once and for all whether or not Odysseus is dead or alive. If you find absolute proof that he is dead, only then may the suitors seek your mother's hand. But I repeat my conviction that he is alive.
Telemachus took Mentes' arm eagerly. And you will stay, sir, and help me in this?
No, no, I must leave. My ship and crew have waited for me long enough. I have copper to trade. Put your faith in your tutor. What was his name?
Mentor.
But put your faith in Mentor.
Ah.
The suitors had fallen silent, and the voice of Phemius could now be clearly heard. They listened as the bard sang of the death of Achilles.
I don't suppose you knew Achilles, too, whispered Telemachus.
Mentes smiled. Phemius turned his verse to the subject of Odysseus and the building of the great wooden horse on the plain of Ilium outside the gates of Troy. The servants began to gather at the side archway to listen. Everyone had heard the story 100 times, but Phemius always found a fresh way to tell it and keep his audience entranced. A door opened higher up, and Penelope appeared in the gallery. Her face was white. Telemachus turned to his guest. "Meet my mother," he began. But Mentes had slipped away.